to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up because we're going live on the Fight Mixer Show.
Welcome to this edition of the Fight Mixer. Where the fuck is Gabe? Hey!
What are you talking about? I've been here the whole time.
What's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm well. Just, checking stuff out, doing stuff, things.
Very good. Yeah. So this episode of the Fight Mixer is brought to you by Gabe is a fucking legend. How the fuck did you arrange this? Like, how the hell did you get Sean Cannon? And this was like, there's a pink elephant in the room, Gabe, and we gotta talk about something. Because, I know, previous episodes, we talked about your experience. Like, you trained Paris Hilton, you dropped that little tidbit in, and, like, you're like, I live a normal life. But then, like, we were talking about it, and you randomly brought up that you were friends with the Karate Kid Part 3 main villain, main antagonist. He said, yeah, let's just get him on the show. Like, how the hell did you arrange this? Like, just pick up a phone and say, hey. Come on.
It was actually really, really difficult. I started off with some small talk text. Sean, how the hell are you? We haven't talked forever. Everything's good. And I'm like, you want to be on our show? And he goes, sure. And that was pretty much it. He's got a book coming out. Enter the Cobra or some stuff like that. He's on a new series that I actually watched a few episodes of called Studio City. Mm-hmm. And he's been training a lot in the mountains doing karate. So I don't know what that entails into, but it gives me an opportunity to see a friend. And we haven't seen each other for probably about 3-4 years now. And good to have him on. He's a great guy. He's, known Sean for quite some time. But he's a good guy.
Great. Gotta be, and I don't want to hear any of this modesty. Oh, yeah. Totally. I don't want to hear any of this modesty shit anymore, Gabe. You are a fucking legend. Just say. You brought on one of the greatest MMA managers of all time. He was your manager, and now you brought on a famous actor. So no more modesty, please. No more.
I mean, Ed is an exceptional human being just in general. And the LFA president. Which the LFA is about to have their 100th show, which is pretty impressive in itself. I'm fortunate that I've met some great people, and I'm fortunate that I can call them friends. It has nothing to do with me. It's just the luck of the draw. And and we have a special guest with Juan in the background there. You might know Juan from such things as Reddit and 4chan. Yeah.
My OnlyFans account.
Yeah. So Juan, you're with us today. Did you want to add anything or?
No, I was just gonna turn around and grab myself something to drink since I see you gentlemen are drinking as well. So
please do.
Good. What are you having today, Juan?
I'm having some 1776 bourbon.
Ooh,
good choice. Yeah, okay, I guess my bubbly sparkling water is the low man on the totem pole. Alas. Yep.
That's up your game up, son.
David, what's the MMA scoop? We probably should handle that. We've got a 3-minute runtime before Mr. Cannon gets involved.
I was asking for like main topics. So the main topic, I was asking my buddies, like, what's the main topics going on in MMA? What's going on with that? And I got Kamaru Usman being a fucking animal. I got that. I mean, did you see his performance?
I'm sorry, was that?
Kamaru Usman, literally, buzzsaw.
That last performance was exceptional. I mean, he's really coming into his own, and I know that a lot of people are talking about Gilbert Burns and him being training partners. And I'd heard from a few people that in the room, Burns got the better of him, which I think that psychologically played a part in it. But when it came time to the big show, it did not matter one way or the other.
Right. And I also Gina Carano getting taken out of Mandalorian. And that's apparently big MMA news right now, is Gina Carano getting taken off of a Disney play.
Yeah, you know, it's funny is that one of my baby students' father was like, yeah, one of your people, and you're one of your people got fired. And I'm like, my people, what happened? What do you mean? They're like, oh, and he goes, Gina. And I'm like, still trying to figure out what he's saying. The Gina Carano, I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, well, look, when you have a contract with a big company like Disney, when they say jump, you better freaking jump, or, you know, the outcome is the outcome. You know, I think that she has she should have the right to say what she wants to say. But right. When you sign a contract, you're being committed to work for something like Disney, which is a child-based organization, you have to abide by what they say. And if they say don't, then you just can't. It's the same thing that any contract you sign, you know, I've signed no non-disclosures. And again, if you go against the non-disclosure, you're fucking yourself.
Especially under the, and I time out, pardon my enthusiasm, but especially under the confines of a publicly traded company like fucking Disney, what this day goes. And if people are like, oh my God, freedom of speech, where's freedom of speech? Listen, motherfuckers, when you have to appease millions of stockholders, there is no freedom of speech whatsoever. When your name goes on the dotted line, they own you. So you have to act in character, in form, be in check at all times, or else you get
killed. I hate to interrupt this impassioned argument, but we got Sean on the line, so I'm bringing him on.
Look at that. One thing to say about Sean, he's on point. Look at that.
Hey, Mr. King. How are you?
Yo, what's up? My friend?
Good to see you, man. You're passionate, brother. I like where you're going.
Yeah. It was getting heated. It was getting heated.
Well, you know, listen, I mean, not to jump right in, but you make a really good point. You know, I mean, when is somebody going to start filing like a wrongful termination suit though for some of this crap? I mean, it's just, I don't know.
This has been the business you've been in for, I think 55 years. So when you sign a contract, you essentially have to hold yourself to a certain standard, correct?
Well, in almost every contract that you sign, especially if it's something that's a network contract or a studio contract, you know, there's going to be a morals clause.
Right.
But generally speaking, I mean, there's a difference between, you know, going out and getting loaded and taking your clothes off and going swimming in a fountain and, you know.
Which is called a Wednesday for me, just to let you know.
Right. And you know, sometimes people say things that, I don't know. I mean, people are being canceled and losing their jobs for saying things that sometimes seem relatively benign. You may disagree with the opinion, but it's a real slippery slope.
Yeah, but how do you battle a billion-dollar company, especially, you know, you follow a wrongful termination? How do you go after Disney, who has billions of dollars? They can drag out the case as long as humanly possible. They have deep pockets. They're going to literally drag it down until you run out of resources, and then you're going to lose anyway. Like, how do you go after Disney?
That's it. I mean, you know, you made a really good point earlier that, you know, when you're under contract, you know, I make it a point. I never put anything political or overtly controversial on my social, because at the end of the day, you're not going to change anyone's mind about anything. I mean, you know, this is for you to put something out there and then get like-minded people to create an echo chamber for you, supporting what you said. And in doing so, you're also going to alienate the other half of the people who disagree. It's just not smart business sense. I mean, and I don't agree with the whole thing about, you know, you're an actor, what do we care what you think? It's not that. As a citizen, everyone has their right to say something, but you better be damn careful what you say, you know, because we are living in a very different time right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, I'm a huge fan of you, Sean. And it was so interesting because I messaged you first and I'm like, oh, you got to come on a show. And I know you're very busy, hopefully filming Cobra Kai season 4, which I'm gonna leak out. I'm going to get that out of you one way or another. No. But Gabe actually, like, he said he knew you. He dropped that name. Like, how did you guys meet?
Gabe,
like,
Gabe and our friends. Gabe and I've been friends for a long time. Gabe trained me for a couple of years.
Freaking way.
Yeah, man. It was awesome.
And you were a martial artist before you became an actor, correct?
Well, I mean, I've always been involved in martial arts at different times throughout my life. I'm a martial arts aficionado. What I call myself, Gabe's a martial artist. I'm a guy that loves martial arts, and I've trained off and on throughout my life. But I did study before getting the role in Karate Kid 3, and frankly, I don't think I would have gotten the role had I not, because it just probably I can't imagine teaching somebody that much choreography to look like a black belt who had no experience. So. Yeah, I was fortunate that I had a pretty strong basics in Japanese karate.
Awesome.
Well, but Sean, so I see your Instagram. You're training again, my friend. You've been in the mountains of Northern California, and
well, I had a really crazy thing happen, Gabe. I'll tell you. So there's a guy by the name of Adam McKinley, and he's been posting a lot of just unbelievable kicks that he does on Instagram. And so I was just really kind of mesmerized by it. You know, I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot of stuff like that in the movies, and I've worked in the movies. And so we started communicating on social, and that led to us talking through text. And eventually we got on the phone together, and he said, listen, why don't you come up and train with me for a week? And I decided at 54 years old, I wanted to start training again. And so I just kind of took a leap of faith and caught two planes up and then rented a car and drove way, way up into Northern California, this little town called Pollock Pines, which is like 4,500 feet elevation. And Adam graciously hosted me at his beautiful house, and we trained every day. And it was really amazing. You know, I called up Robert Young, who's the editor for Black Belt Magazine. And I've been in Black Belt Magazine a couple times. And I said, look, I'm going to go do this crazy kind of midlife crisis adventure. And he's like, well, why don't you write an article about it? So he gave me the assignment to write an article about this experience, which will probably be coming out. It's not going to come out in this Black Belt, which is now a quarterly magazine, but in the next one, I think in April it's going to come out. And you know, the gist of the article that I'm working on is I've kind of branded this line from my evil doppelganger, Mike Barnes, your karate's a joke. And so I decided at 54 years old, I was going to go find out if my karate was a joke. And you know, really the sum total of what I took away from this is that my karate is not a joke, because I still carry with me kind of that sensibility of the martial arts spirit and the love for it and the respect for it. And, you know, can I do, you know, spinning tornado kicks and fly through the air? No, I can't do that. But the fact that it reinvigorated me to start training again, for me, what I took away from it is my karate is not a joke because of that.
Good question. So how do you think Johnny L. and Michael Barnes would interact in CK if they bring the Barnes character back? That's a very good question.
Well, here's the thing. Everyone wants to see Mike Barnes and Johnny Lawrence fight, and they don't even know each
other. I do.
I mean, why do we assume that, like, Mike and Johnny won't be boys? Maybe they go antiquing together. I don't know. You know?
I'll tell you.
Barnes is
the...
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, please, if you will, please.
No, I was just going to say that he's the bad boy of karate. Like, he should not be friends with anybody. If you're going to hold the moniker, the bad boy. And now let's admit it, it's going to be the bad grandpa. But,
oh, ouch.
Come on. I got to give you a hard time. It's been too long, my friend. It's been too long.
You know, listen, maybe Mike Barnes kind of, you know, look, he was 17. I mean, there's not too many people at 17 that can't turn their life around. You know, maybe he went into the military and became an officer and straightened his life out. Maybe he's an anger management coach. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of different ways they could go with it.
See, I have a theory. And by the way, it's a testament how great of an actor you really are. Mike Barnes, in my opinion, is the greatest villain and the greatest adversary of Daniel Russo, who I think is a pussy. Like, but that's your neither here or there. But like, I think Mike Barnes is a great villain for a variety of different reasons. This is the reason why.
Okay, tell me why. Johnny Barnes,
you had Johnny Barnes, okay? But he already took an L. He already lost his girl, Daniel Russo. He was already emotionally invested. He had something to prove. You know, he had too much to prove. He was trying to be that bad guy and that big shot in high school, too emotionally invested. And then he got chosen, great villain, but it's like, oh, my uncle doesn't love me, blah, blah, blah. Like, he was already too emotionally invested. Mike Barnes was, F you pay me, give me all your gems. I don't care what's going on with all these crazy adults and everything. I'm going to beat this guy's ass, and I'm literally going to win this tournament and just beat this guy because I'm a competitor. Mike Barnes had no emotional attachment to any of the characters whatsoever. That's why he was such a beloved villain. And you know, like, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. You're the actor, but that's why I always loved Mike Barnes.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very flattered. You know, Mike, not the smartest guy, not the smartest tool in the shed. He did get baffled by a kata. You know, I mean, you know, who's ever been in a fight and gets baffled by a kata? But I appreciate that. You know, it was a really fun character. He's kind of a guy that people love to hate, but. What's crazy to me is besides people loving to hate him, they kind of really legitimately like what he, you know, terrorizes Daniel.
Right. Which is awesome.
So speaking of which, you have a book coming out, don't you?
I do. Yes. I'm really excited about it.
So let's plug the book. That's an important, sure. That's absolutely an important part of this whole journey.
Thank you. Okay. So the book is called Way of the Cobra. And the setup for the book is that I'm the sensei and you are students in my dojo, the Dojo of Life. Of Cobra Life. And Cobra is an acronym created from the words character, optimization, balance, respect, and abundance. And these are the strategies, these are the philosophies that I've used to achieve some of the success that I've achieved. You know, I help people get really clear and focused on what their success is. You know, a lot of times people think that success is the you know, the bloated Instagram feed of some celebrity and all the silly toys they parade on their Instagram feed, or it's, you know, it's the commercials that were spoon-fed from Madison Avenue or the airbrushed magazine covers we see. And none of that has anything to do with your success. You got to figure out what your success is. And everybody's success is different. And if you don't get clear with what it is, it's like going on a trip and not knowing the destination. So that's a big part of what I deal with in the book. You know, there's two things that I say in the book. I say, look, I got good news and I got bad news. Let's go with the bad news first. The bad news is I don't have a silver bullet that is going to turn you into a cobra, turn you into that beast that is going to allow you to be that super successful individual you want to be. But here's the good news. It's like that Zen riddle. How did the ship get in the bottle? It was already there. Everything you need to achieve all of that, you already know. There's nothing in the book really that is reinventing the wheel, but you know, it's the same with any self-help book. It's really all stuff that we know that you just have to dig down and get in touch with. And a lot of times it's not so much what the message is, it's the messenger. And so what I know is that hopefully I'm going to be the messenger that's able to finally get people to follow what they already know to be true within them and to achieve their success.
Right. And what I love about you is, you know, you play one of the biggest bullies in the game, but yet you also are a big advocate in the anti-bullying community and also anti-harassment. Like, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'm actually the international youth ambassador for a charity called Buddha Bullying. And it's really funny. You know, when I played the role of Mike Barnes, I never imagined that one of the great byproducts of that role was going to be that it allowed me to create kind of a conduit, a bridge to reach young kids. Because when I go into schools and I talk to kids about bullying, I'll play the clip of the final tournament scene with me, you know, yelling at Daniel on the mat. And I say, would you guys believe that scary guy used to get bullied? And so right away, it kind of bridges the age gap And it gives me a couple minutes to kind of get in there and make a connection. And it works. It works really well. So, yeah, it's something really near and dear to my heart.
Do we lose him? Or is that just me?
What?
I still got him. No, no. Gabe was wondering if he lost you. But we still got you.
Okay. You got me. Yeah. So I was just going to say that, you know, suicide is the fourth leading cause of death among adolescents. And a huge contributing factor to that is bullying. And, you know, when I was a kid, if you got bullied, you got bullied on the way to school, you got bullied at school, you got bullied on the way back. But now with cyberbullying, with, you know, the hit of one keystroke, kids are getting bullied to the whole school 24/7. And it's really sad. In the Coachella Valley, where I live, in Palm Springs, months ago, we had an 8-year-old who hung himself. I mean, it's
an 8-year-old.
That these little children think that they've simply got no way out, no one who's hearing them. And, you know, it's something I'm passionate about, and it's something we really have to eradicate.
Yeah. Unbelievable. That's crazy. And Gabe has a lot of people, like a lot of kids in his dojo and everything like that. I think it all stems from, you know, self-respect and, you know, self-worth and, you know, confidence and
confidence is a huge part of it. I think one of the biggest elements that martial arts is kind of going to be honed towards is the confidence, the kids being able to stand up to someone saying something, stand up to, and then also being able to turn off the negative, you know, like I don't care what you say, your words don't mean very much. And if you're going to get physical, I have the ability to take care of that as well.
You know, one of the other things I talk about in the book is that some really simple secrets to success are treat people with integrity and respect and act with integrity and respect. And, you know, we have become such an unbelievably vitriolic and divided society right now that people are forgetting how to treat each other with just basic respect. You know, I can disagree with you or something that you're saying and not have to, like, you know, burn your house to the ground and vilify you and make you a horrible person. What, you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know, man. I really hope the pendulum is going to swing back, because it just trickles down. And I think that, you know, it starts at home. It starts with, you know, how kids see parents treat other people. And, you know, bullying is such a weird thing too, because adults don't really bully each other. Like, if you pulled a lot of the shit that kids pull in high school at your place of work, you would either be fired or you would be arrested. And it's like, for some reason in this population of young kids, it exists. And it's like, if you don't figure out how not to do this when you're a kid, these are the social skills that you're developing now and that are going to really cause a lot of problems for you as an adult.
Yeah.
So I think you bring up a really good point about it starting at home. And not to toot my own horn, but my kid actually got an award last week from his school, because he noticed a kid in his chat box in the remote learning was picking on a girl. And my kid jumped in. My kid's only six. He's turning six tomorrow, actually. Wow. And he told the kid he needs to stop and he needs to be nice. And he told him that several times. So, and that's because my wife is constantly impressing this on him. Like, hey, you don't bully. You treat people with respect. So, you know, you bring up a good point that it does start at home.
Hey, don't you think a lot of treating people with respect comes from having sort of an innate confidence? You know, it's like, you're not trying to prove something. You know, you can handle yourself if you have to. You know, a lot of times I think when people behave like this, it comes from some deep-rooted insecurity in themselves.
Without question.
And that's what martial arts does.
Yeah,
I 100% agree with that. So let's segue back, Sean. You said that you're doing this training. You're up in the mountains. Will, out of curiosity, will we see any new kicks? If there were to be, I know there's going to be a season 4 of Cobra Kai. Will we happen to see any of these kicks involved in? Just throwing it out there.
Well, you know, I mean, look, all I can say, Gabe, is we shall see. If I had to lay money on it, I would say that we probably haven't seen the last of Mike Barnes. You know, there was a little tip of the hat to Mike Barnes in season 3, where there was a sort of a flashback of Daniel fighting Mike. So, you know, the guys.
I saw that. I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, I grabbed my wife. I'm like, look, I go, look who it is. And she's like, who is that? And I'm like, oh, Sean. No. Like, she knows you as Sean. She never, right. She's, you remember my, when you met my girlfriend, who's now my wife, she was 15. No. She was 24. She was 24. So the Karate Kid, she was born 1990 is when she was born.
Yeah. And I think Karate Kid came out in like 1990.
Yeah, exactly. There's a gap as far as recognizing pulp culture and whatnot. But I thought it was great to see that you were in there. And then actually speaking of other, I didn't know this at all. Then we started talking. You have the new Amazon show, Studio City.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that.
That was great, man. It was they're the little 10 minutes. So how did that come about?
So it's an Emmy award-winning digital drama that's on Amazon Prime. It's called Studio City. It's something that I had been trying to get put together for a very long time. And, once I enlisted a friend of mine, he's a director I've done a couple movies with. His name is Tim Woodward Jr. Once we got together and once my wife Michelle got involved, things really started to take shape. And we've got 11 episodes. We were nominated for 8 Emmys last year. And it's a show that centers around my character, who is an aging soap star. And he stars on the number 2 soap in the world called Hearts on Fire. And, he's a guy that you look at him and ostensibly you think he's kind of got the world by the tail. You know, he's got a young, pretty girlfriend and he's got kind of some of the trappings of being a guy on TV. But as you start to peel back the layers of the onion, you realize he's a very flawed guy with lots and lots of problems, relationship problems, and he becomes very relatable. They say write what you know. And I've worked off and on in daytime television since 1992. And this is a world I know very well. And the show deals with a lot of socially relevant topics. We dealt with Me Too. We deal with, we have cancer. We have an LGBTQ storyline. And we actually made history because we have the very first trans male actor who was nominated for an Emmy, which means we're the first show to ever have a trans male actor nominated for an Emmy. But we don't do it in a way that's beating you over the head. You know, nobody wants to be preached to, you want to be entertained, but we also make you think a little bit.
Good. Those are the best roles where you can we don't have to push it on somebody, but you can spoon feed and make them think a different way. Those are the best roles to play. And people are subliminally being exposed to it. That's not really a bad thing that I thought. Right. We're getting education through television. Those are the best roles, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really been a dream come true.
We had another question for you, Sean. Someone asked, "Have you watched Cobra Kai? What is your take on it so far?"
Oh yeah, I'm a fan of the show, Gabe. I've watched.
How big you would be.
And I think the guys that did this, the three writer producers that did this were perfect guys to put this together because they come from a comedy background. They did Harold and Kumar. They did Hot Tub Time Machine, and so. I think the show has got a tremendous amount of humor in it. And they do something really interesting. They straddle this fence between catering to guys that sort of my age that were original fans of the movie and then catering to an entirely different generation that are Cobra Kai fans. And that I would imagine a lot of these young kids literally had to go back and watch the original movies because they got into Cobra Kai before ever watching The Karate Kid. Karate Kid 2, Karate Kid 3, et cetera. And they managed to hit the right notes so that it keeps both of the audiences interested. And if I'm not mistaken, it's the number one show on Netflix.
I was talking with my friends about this, and the perfect way to bring Mike Barnes back is he's fresh off the boat from Brazil. He has a Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Yeah, he has a Brazilian jiu-jitsu right now. Everyone's like, where's our ground game? Does anyone know submissions? And then Mike Barnes is like, he holds up his black belt. Your karate is really shit now. And just taps out fucking everybody. That would be the best way to do that.
I like that. Maybe he's coming back from Carnival. He's got beads on. You know, he's got a bottle of Gasa. He's got a couple.
Really hungover.
I actually think would be great is that they could do a pre-story where they hire me and I actually get to go to Brazil and film for a couple weeks to really lend some authenticity to that storyline.
Yeah, absolutely. Without question. And with all these roles and all these great things you're doing, isn't it like humbling to know that there's 100 people? Like, we announced that you're going to be on the show, and I literally got messages like, you got to ask about Cobra Kai. You got to, like, you know, dig a little bit. Like, isn't it humbling that you get 100 questions per day? Are you going to be on the show? Your character was that beloved. You were that beloved with the series.
It is incredibly humbling that, you know, something I did 30 some years ago still has some relevance. And not only that, now with, like I said, with a completely different generation. And I'm constantly appreciative and humbled with the people that are fans of the Karate Kid Cobra Kai universe. And they've been so good to me and so kind to me. And I really appreciate it. I do.
Awesome. And, sorry.
I was gonna just switch topics a little bit. So you're a martial arts fan as well, correct?
Sure, of course.
More of a friend background, but who are the fighters right now that, like, in MMA, the that are out there that you're like I'm actually enjoying watching them fight?
Wow, Gabe, I'm gonna be completely straight up. I've been so busy the last 6 months that I haven't really kept up with UFC a whole lot. I mean, look, I like watching Conor McGregor. It's so funny because I was actually at UFC 1 and I was there at the beginning of UFC Denver, which was just mind-boggling. I don't know, Gabe. I haven't actually seen a UFC fight in a while. Who are some of the ones you like the most?
Oh, so you're gonna guy to ask.
That's what we in the entertainment PR business call PR jujitsu. I throw it back on you.
Smart. Well done. Very well played. Very well played.
When you first met Gabe, were you as starstruck as I was? That's a very good question.
I have to tell you, we met through a mutual friend, and I kind of was because, and I've said this to Gabe. I mean, for me, a guy that is willing to walk in that octagon and hear that door shut and stand toe to toe with another guy, I mean, he instantly has my respect. And it's just something that when I met Gabe and I knew a little bit about his history, I was just inclined to respect him and want to get to know him. And basically, I think the conversation went something like, Gabe said, so you know karate. And as the evening progressed, I said, listen, Gabe, if you don't kill me, I'll train privately with you. And so we wound up training a lot and, became really good friends. And I really enjoyed training with Gabe. Right now it's kind of a geography issue. Otherwise, I would love to train with him again at some point.
Did you ever think UFC would blow up? Because hearing that you were at UFC 1 is absolutely mind-blowing. But, Karate Kid was very important to the culture and educating people about mixed martial arts, even though it's a part of martial arts. Did you think UFC would blow up, being at UFC 1, blow up to where it is today?
I don't know, and I'll tell you why. Because UFC 1 was so different. There really were almost no rules. And I honestly felt it was too violent. There were things that went on in some of the fights and in the prelims. I mean, I remember seeing one fight. It was a ninjutsu guy named Scott Morris, I think. And he fought Pat Smith. You remember who Pat Smith was?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I thought that Pat Smith had killed him. I had never seen a guy's face open up like that. And there were other things, like there were guys with their heads on the ground getting elbowed. And I think a lot of the audience too, you would think that it's raw meat for the, for the hungry pack, but a lot of people were like, wow, this is a bit much. I don't know if I thought it was going to be this big, but I think it's a complete testament to what those guys have done to make it, one of the leading sports in the world in such a short amount of time too.
Well, but admittedly, Sean, like, so I, with the, they actually have, they've put so many rules into place. And even like, I remember when I was, a, you know, I was a teenager when I watched the first UFCs and the reality of it, you know, I mean, like, you know, teeth being knocked out and,
yeah,
and punching the groin and grabbing hair. And like, this is stuff that obviously is all outlawed now. And I mean, now that we wear gloves, you have to have protective gear and there are certain rules that you, but again, at that time frame, it was, I mean, all you got to do is win. You know what I mean? And how you win is unfortunately a very, very real and ugly thing.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I think that's really cool about it, though, is, you know, if you look at UFC 1, with the exception of a couple fighters, you know, I don't think the guys were really in the same athletic category as a lot of the fighters now. I think that you've become so well-rounded now in multiple arts that it's nice that it hasn't just remained kind of like this thuggish slugfest like UFC 1 was. And I'm not putting the guys down in UFC 1 because they're much bigger than I am. But I think it's important that you see the evolution of the UFC and how these are like the most premier athletes in the world now, capable of doing just mind-bending, seemingly impossible things.
Yeah. And who's your favorite old and new Cobra Kai character right now?
That's currently on Cobra Kai right now?
Correct. Old and new. That was the question. Old and new.
Well, I mean, old. I kind of got to go with Mike Barnes. I'm a little biased. I really did love Mr. Miyagi. I think that Pat Morita did more for martial arts than he probably ever could have imagined. You know, Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon did something really amazing. He showed that you can have an Asian leading man. And there was some good philosophy in Enter the Dragon, but it wasn't, I think, until The Karate Kid where widespread audiences got to listen to some really wonderful philosophy that is at the basis of being a true martial artist. It kind of went mainstream that way. So I'd have to say Mr. Miyagi. As far as the new one, I think Johnny Lawrence is such an interesting multi-layered character. I think what the producers have done, you know, turning the show on its head, initially implicating that maybe Daniel was the bully and Johnny was kind of the one who, you know, was getting the short end of the stick is really funny and interesting. But I like as a guy that's, you know, sort of the same age as Billy Zabka, you know, he's kind of anachronistic. I mean, you know, for me, like the 80s were such a great decade, the 80s and the 90s, you know, and he's kind of the same way. And I think everybody always still loves the music from the decade where they kind of were growing up, you know, and now everyone thinks it's lame that he listens to, like, you know, hair metal and stuff like that. So I guess I can relate to him a lot.
That's great.
And Bruce Lee was, Enter the Dragon was the first exposure to like actual, like a little bit of like mixed martial arts of what we see today, because the first scene you see Bruce Lee locking in a submission and tapping out somebody wearing the MMA gloves. That was like the first, like, you know, introduction to mixed martial arts or modern day mixed martial arts were for American audiences too. And, you know, Mr. Miyagi was so influential and he was such a beloved character and, you know, God rest his soul to the person that played him. And so a question that somebody asked was, what are your favorite hobbies besides acting, cooking, martial arts, all that fun stuff? What's your favorite hobbies?
I'm kind of an avid language enthusiast. So, I mean, I've studied Italian probably for 15 years, lived over in Italy, and now I've been studying Mandarin Chinese for about a year and a half. So that's something I really enjoy doing. Actually, I have a lesson with my teacher who is in China. As soon as we finish, I do a couple lessons a week through Zoom. I do love cooking, and I really love traveling. You know that, but you know, making my show Studio City for me is you know one of my biggest passions, and to be able to take something I love and do it and. You know, have it also be a part of my business. That's like taking the hobby you like the most and being able to kind of monetize it, I guess.
Do you think you're gonna stick training with doing more karate now, or are you gonna
Yeah, maybe. I've already got plans to go back up and train with Adam McKinley again in about 8 weeks, 7-8 weeks. And I'm going to continue to do that. I'm going to fly up and train with him. Just got myself one of those high dig stretching machines with the wheel in the middle. And listen,
okay,
I'm 54. We're going to see what I can do. You know, I like it.
Awesome. Great.
So somebody had a question. Do you have any embarrassing stories about Gabe?
Oh, yeah. No, that's...
No, I have a lot. I'm not going to tell any, but yeah.
So
yeah,
that's great. Sure, destruction though. Gabe has a lot about me too. So,
yeah, it's one of those things. It's like you open up that Pandora's box, and then other things pop out as well that you didn't want. Yeah, it's just better to leave. What they say, leave laying dogs lying or something along that.
Yeah, I'm with you, bro.
Yeah, I don't know what they say, but that's basically.
Let's go with that.
You can't confirm or deny Cobra Kai season 4, but what other acting roles are on the horizon?
Well, we just got finished actually shooting 5 new episodes of Studio City about 6 weeks ago, maybe 6-7 weeks ago, and you know, filming during a pandemic is like a Herculean. We had a greatly reduced crew. We had to adhere to all sorts of new rules from the Screen Actors Guild. You know, people had to be tested, have a doctor on set, masks, social distancing. Really difficult to film doing that. And that took a lot out of us. I think I'm probably leaving in a couple of weeks to go start a film in Atlanta. So I'm working on getting that closed and just, you know, getting ready for my book to come out and promoting that. I'm also going to be heading over to Liverpool, England, November 13th and 14th for the Liverpool Comic Con. So I'm kind of excited about that. I'm going to go over and meet all my UK Cobras. And, you know, we're going to start mapping out what season 2 of Studio City is going to look like. And we'll be filming that sometime towards the end of this year.
I can only imagine how brutal it is acting during a pandemic. And you know what? Warner Brothers is pumping out movies after movies for HBO Max. And like, I'm seeing like, how do you guys do it? Like, especially with under the confines of pandemic and you have to take all these safety measures. And I've been hearing horror stories, especially like, you know, just reading articles and everything. Like, how do you do it? Like you just like give it once in that nightmare. No, that you're living in?
At the end of the day, if you're a production that is extremely well financed, it's a lot easier. You can comply with what needs to be done, and it sort of becomes, you know, becomes a two-prong issue. It's what the hell's that? That was weird. somebody's using some power tools, or anyway, it becomes a function of the actors being willing to work and complying with the rules. And the production being able to respond to the new protocols that are necessary, a lot of which are very expensive. I mean, it's become more expensive to film during COVID, and that's why there's been a greatly reduced amount of production. So, you know, hopefully, as this drags on a little bit, the industry is going to come back. But I mean, you know, you see major movie theaters that are filing for bankruptcy, and you know, people have gotten very used to watching great entertainment from Netflix and Amazon Prime at home. I think it's going to be a lot more difficult to get people to go out to the theater, especially given the fact that they may have some hesitation because, you know, you got to interact with other people so much.
Right, and you being in the business, do you know if this is affecting profits of big movie companies? Because if it's not, then they obviously don't need to go back to big movie theaters.
Oh, it seems so, yeah.
Well, no, I'm sure it's affecting them. I mean, look, it's absolutely affecting them as far as you know, box office. But the flip side of that is that the subscription television and, you know, pay-per-view films and all that sort of stuff has probably, you know, completely skyrocketed. So many people are home. I mean, yeah, you're probably the same as I am. I mean, how many series have you binged since you've been home? It's
like you just watch. Tiger King, over and over again. Tiger King.
Not only have my subscriptions increased, but my drinking and wine increase as well. So,
yeah, I think the wine industry is doing very well. Postmates,
booming.
Yeah, yeah. Do we lose Gabe?
I think we lost. So. Yeah, do, are we gonna now get back?
Now we can talk about him, right? Are you guys in LA?
No, I'm in New Jersey right now.
Oh, you're
in
Jersey. Okay.
Yes, sir.
New York myself.
Excellent. Well, right in the city?
Yeah.
No, I'm in upstate New York. I'm in the country, the Catskills.
Oh, okay.
Great. I lost your minute. Sorry about that, gentlemen.
No worries.
That's good. We're talking shit.
Perfect. We're talking shit. As soon as I go away. Oh, wow. Thanks, Matt. It absolutely wasn't. Hey, you know what?
Fan base, brother.
Every time. So
somebody had a previous question. What's your relationship like with the actor of Daniel Russo, Ralph Macchiato? Like, what was your relationship? Like, he was legitimately scared of you, I hear. Like, I saw like tidbits and rumors from your side.
He was a great guy. He was extremely professional. He's always been really kind and nice to me. I didn't interact with him a whole lot other than when we were working together during the filming. And I think part of that was a strategic decision from the production that they wanted to keep us separate. They didn't want us forming a close friendship because they wanted, hopefully at the end that it would culminate in what it ultimately did. Over the years though, I've seen Ralph at, various fan events, autograph signings, and it's always been great to see him. It's that film holds a very special place in my heart, and he's a big part of that. As a function of having been in the Karate Kid 3, it changed my life in a lot of ways, and that wouldn't have happened without Ralph. And so, I'm forever appreciative and thankful to him.
And that scene when you were screaming like, "Fuck it, your cry is a joke," and like you were screaming, that was improvised, right?
That was all improvised. Yeah, yeah. They let me go. They just they just said go for it. And here's the thing. Rick, I don't think they were 100% sure I was going to be able to pull it off. I mean, you got to remember, I was a very, very new actor. I had just started studying acting. Pat Morita and Martin Cove and Ralph were all known commodities. They'd done two films with them before. They knew what to expect. And, this was my first big film, and it was like a big film. I don't know that they were convinced that when push came to shove that I was going to be able to completely deliver what they wanted, and fortunately I did, and they were, you could see like there was a big sigh of relief among all the studio executives and upper echelon producers when they knew that's because if that scene doesn't work, the movie doesn't work at all.
And what do you say the best actors are like that, where it's a little bit of themselves with the volume turned up? Like, what would you say makes the best actors? And what, like, if you can guide someone to success, what would you say?
That's a tough question. I mean, I've always felt there's two types of actors. I felt that they're chameleons, like Daniel Day-Lewis, people that completely, assume another person's skin. And then I think that there's, movie stars, which the way I always define that is, if the chips are down and you're walking down a dark alley, you're going to want, Kevin Costner or Harrison Ford or one of those guys to have your back. And then, but every now and then, guys that are movie stars, there's a nexus between chameleon and movie star. And you see some of these guys, as their careers go on, are able to do some roles that you might not initially think you'd see them in. And, what do I think makes a great actor? I think it's a lot of things. I think certainly, you've got to study and you've got to have a technique behind what you do. I think you need to have a very rich, big life to draw on. I've always found the ability to improv really helpful, because I can't tell you how many times, you're stuck in a scene, something isn't working, and they give you the green light to go ahead and sort of play with something. And if you have the ability to create something, dialogue, or even if it's a non-dialogue thing with an action, it can really enhance the performance.
So we're heading. Oh, I'm sorry, Gabe. What was that?
Oh, no. I feel pretty good. I was gonna. Someone asked me something. Asked a question on Facebook, and I don't even remember exactly how to word it, but it had to do with Sean's daytime television career, which you had a good solid run with.
Yeah.
You were a soap opera star. I mean, my grandmother loves you.
It's kind of like being a porn star, though. I mean, because nobody's just a porn actor. Everyone's a porn star, right? I mean, so everyone's a soap star. So I don't know how much of a
you do one movie and you're a star. But I mean, right, if you're on a soap one day, you're not. If you do one soap opera, you're definitely not a soap star.
But you do one porno, you could be a porn star, right?
You're a porn star. There's one girl, I think she's only done three scenes, and she's probably one of the most well-known porn stars out there.
He's stumbling for the name, like he's not a member of the fan club.
So going back, what was your favorite character to play in daytime television?
It was Deacon Sharp on The Bold and Beautiful, and then I had the opportunity to play the character on The Young and the Restless. Yeah, it was a great character.
And that character was on two separate shows, correct?
Yeah, I was on Bold and Beautiful, but then I also went over and played Deacon on Young and the Restless for a couple years.
So we're heading around that time. So I'm going to leave final thoughts with Gabe first for final questions. And, you know, Gabe, let it roll, man.
I don't have any questions, but I'm thankful that you came on, and it's been far too long. Sean and I have had some really good times together. He's a solid, solid guy, and I'm thankful that his career is still going and doing all this different stuff. And I think he was kind of at the end of his soap career when we started really spending time together. And it's nice to know that he's still acting and doing stuff and putting out books. Because I have one of Sean's books, the cookbook that you did.
Oh, the cookbook? Yeah.
Cookbook, yeah. Yeah. Sean did a cookbook. And
the last one was Success Factor X was my last book, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, he's writing, he's putting stuff out there. And I just wanted to thank him for coming on. I can't think of any particular any questions. Favorite dog breed?
Well, you know, listen, I have a mini pug, and I love this pug. I mean, I never thought I was going to be like a little dog guy, and you know,
you're absolutely a little dog guy.
It goes everywhere with us. We become like the weird dog people. So, you know.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
So where can we follow? So I have two questions. Where can we follow you? Where can we follow your work? And obviously Studio City, we're obviously going to watch it on Prime. And are you going to train at Gabe's gym when you get ready for Cobra Kai season 4, by the way?
Well, listen, I would love to come train with Gabe sometime. I would love that. I've been doing a lot of traveling, and I'm not really in Los Angeles as much as I used to be, but I will absolutely make arrangements to come train with Gabe. He's terrific, and he's a great teacher. You asked me something else, and I don't remember what it was. Oh,
where can we find you?
Follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean Kanan. You can follow me on Instagram. It's Sean.Kanan. You can pre-order Way of the Cobra at wayofthecobra.com. And if you're in the UK, look forward to seeing you in Liverpool November 13th and 14th.
Awesome, man. Sean Kanan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Guys, we wish you all the best, all right? You guys stay healthy. Stay well, and good luck with the show. Keep doing it, right, guys?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Okay, brother.
What about Juan? We have. Oh wow, good job, Juan. You fucked up, dude. That's why we don't use you. I wanted to give you an opportunity to interject a little bit, but you know what? You already messed it up. You already ruined the whole thing. Let's cut the whole show. It's done.
We tried badgering him about Cobra Kai season 4. We tried sneaking it in. It was not going to happen.
He did say that we probably have not seen the last of Mike Barnes.
Oh, he totally signed that non-disclosure. He's totally going to be.
That's one of the non-disclosure agreement.
Oh, totally.
One of the viewers was pretty excited. I think they're pretty convinced he's coming back. So
he's fucking coming back. I'm telling you, and he's the best character. They have no choice. They have to bring him back. They have to.
He's way better than Chosen. I'll tell you, like, he's better than Chosen.
Absolutely, without question. Chosen was a pussy. Like, and not the actor. Chosen, overall, Chosen was a great, great great character. But emotionally, he was weak. He had something to prove to his uncle. He was emotionally invested, just like Johnny Lawrence. We found out Johnny Lawrence turned into like an alcoholic. Mike Burns was just a bad mofo, up and down. Like he literally just wanted to like compete. He wanted to be a competitor. He wanted to knock out Daniel Russo because it was financial monetary gain from it. That's why he's the best character. There was no chips in his armor. And he
get that money.
Exactly.
He was a show me the money way before even you knew what the hell that meant. So exactly. I mean, I respect that.
He was showing me money before Conor McGregor ever was showing me money. Just saying.
There you go, exactly.
And you know what? Like, I was watching that movie as a kid, and like I always liked Cobra Kai. I always thought like Daniel Russo was like a beta male. Like I like Cobra Kai. I was big fans of like any Cobra Kai character. And like I remember watching that movie, I'm like, oh, Mike Barnes is totally gonna win this. And then like right when he caught that like bullshit kick in overtime, I'm like, Dad, come on, man. And my dad's like, he's a fucking pussy, son. And like I remember. Like, it's valid. Like, Mike Barnes is the most convincing and likable villain in the entire series, bar none, without question.
I'm not in disagreement.
So we're talking about Gina Carano and just talking, it's like a Christmas present because we only got 3 minutes. So we talked about Gina Carano and our opinions about that. And then another topic I got was, I don't know why they keep bringing this up about transgenders in MMA.
I really, really dislike identity politics. Like yeah, that's just
I don't like it either. But
men and women are drastically, drastically different.
Right.
And a perfect example is I one of the Williams sisters, who is one of the greatest of all time, played a pickup game with the 203rd ranked male player. Right. And he murked her. Murked her. 203, you're not even, no one knows who this guy is. 203 is such a low ranking that, like, you know, he basically, he's probably an instructor at a golf course. And right. He destroyed her. And now, admittedly, that is tennis, but MMA, where punching and throwing play a massive part of it, I think it's a no-go. It's absolutely should not happen. And listen, if you want to be transgender, you want to have a transgender league, it's going to fail because it's not going to be interesting. But right. That if you want to do that and you feel like this is the only way for exclusivity, that's fine. But again, like it's just not.
There's scientific data and all that to back up that biologically they're both different, right? And if you look at stats, like for example, there's a case right now in Connecticut where some girls are suing the education system because transgender females are winning the races. And you know, I was looking up some data on it, and if you look at the fastest 100 meter dash runners in the world. I could have kept going probably to like number 20, but all 10 of the fastest are faster than the fastest woman. So you can't deny that kind of data. You can't deny that kind of science. It's just part of life, you know.
Well, and something with MMA, the density and the strength factor, and get the hell out of here with they're using whatever hormones to change up and change the dynamic. Who's the Fox something Fox?
Yeah, Fallon Fox. So it's very interesting, Gabe, because I've been getting asked this question for the last 2 years. I never really touched it with the 10-foot pole because you know I'm peace and love and all the above. I have a mom from the Boogie Down Bronx, and I was raised with love in my heart, so I accept everybody for who they are. And I'm pretty different myself, and you know, like the world has accepted me, so I accept other different people, and everyone's unique in their own certain way. So, like, who cares? Like, as long as you're happy, that's all that matters. The end's justified.
Amen. I agree with that 100%.
So I got this topic because, you know, and people like to drag me into a political, and they keep bringing this up, you know, because Biden obviously he made that men that identify as women can compete in different sports. And my personal opinion on it, and I'll answer it right now, is I don't have an opinion because I'm not a woman competing in mixed martial arts. And, you know, yeah, this has been beaten to death considering at Fallon Fox, the transgender that, she's a man that identifies as a woman. She already lost to a woman, you know, and she lost a man who identifies a woman, which is very brave, fought in the women's division and actually lost. I don't have an opinion because I've never competed, obviously, in a female league, so I don't know. I've never stood in the cage as a female. But I will say this. I was raised by tough women. I know women that don't care if you identify as a man, woman, or a fucking dinosaur. They're going to fight no matter what. They're going to defend themselves, and they're not going to back down no matter what fucking challenge lies before them. So, you know, my opinion is I don't have an opinion, but I do – I can name 100 tough, badass mofo women that don't give a shit whether you're a man, woman, identify as a rhinoceros. They're going to fight. They're going to fight you no matter what. And that's my opinion on it. If you want to talk about it. So
fair enough. What about you, Juan?
Well, like I said, you can't deny the biology in it. The, my issue with transgender females competing in high school sports in particular is that, you do have the data that says about the 20% of the top 20% of males will beat most females in track and field, for example. And this is affecting females in the way of females can no longer, if those transgender females are in their school, those females, biological females, cannot advance to regionals, can't advance to states. And this is affecting them in college admissions, for example, because now they don't have those state recognition, those state titles, to get that full-blown scholarship that they were hoping for. So, and that's where I think the issue is. I personally don't care about who you are, what you identify as. When transgenders wanted to go into my bathroom, I don't give a shit. Exactly. I was with them at that point. I was in the military. I was in open bay showers with people that were gay and people that later turned out to be transgender, and they never tried to grab my dick. So I'm good.
The identity politics as a whole is a really strange... I really just don't care. Like, you, as long as you're not affecting, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, do whatever the hell you want to do. Like, if you feel that you're a bat and that you only come out at night and you have to have wings, and I don't care. Like, really, like, do you. And I genuinely don't care. And to go back to what David said is, if a female is willing to fight a transgender female or a transgender, that is a decision they made. And they're going to do that, you know. And look, we when it comes to especially things like with an agreed upon match, you have to make the decision to say, yeah, I'll take the fight.
Right.
So anyone that fights them is making the decision. Like, I don't give a like Dave said, you're getting a woman's like, I don't give a fuck what it is. I don't care if it's, you know, if it's a horse that says it's a female. Like, let's go. Let's do this. But the thing about identity politics is just weird to me, and
it's a unique topic, and it's also a controversial topic. So it's it's one of those topics that, you know, whether you have an opinion or you don't have an opinion, or you have an opinion that is completely right or left, you know, there's no right or wrong here, no right or wrong answer to an opinion. But, you know, as long as somebody's happy, that's all that matters. You know, that's. It's one of those very gray areas that not a lot of people like to talk about because it's a very uncomfortable subject, and it brings out emotions. That's why I never like talking about it, because I like everybody, you know? So as long as you're happy, that's all I give a shit about, you know?
Yeah. My concern is only, you know, look, if you're not, whatever your belief system is, whatever you want to do with your life, if you're not hurting people, and I don't care. I just don't. Like, you know, I think it's always weird to me that people get so caught up in it. It's just be you. Like, the idea of freedom is do what is best for you. Obviously, as long as it's not hurting other people, I don't really have a qualm with it.
Right. I'm with you, man. I'm a big libertarian, so I'm with you. I don't give a shit what you do as long as it's not affecting me.
And the last topic I got was Jake Paul's a pussy, which I don't know if it's a topic. I think it's a
sign. That's not a topic. That's just a flat out fact. I don't think, you know, I do think he's a pussy. I do think he's a pussy because he fights these non-fighters and then acts like he's a fighter. You know, and but honestly, it's not even Jake Paul's fault. It's all the people that follow him and that pay money to watch this asshole and give him a stage that are at fault for a Jake Paul. If everyone ignored Jake Paul, he would be irrelevant and wouldn't care. Nobody would care. But the fact that people actually feed this douchebag and let him feel the way he wants to feel, that's the real problem. It's not Jake Paul. It's the idiots that feed Jake Paul's ego, that feed his pockets.
I think he's gone.
I think if I'm going to go with an issue that we have in society, it's that we like to make stupid people famous.
Right. It is a pandemic all itself. I mean, Carol Baskin, Tiger King, Kim Kardashian, we can go down the, go down the list and everything like that. So, like, you know, obviously we like to make stupid people famous. And Jake Paul is one of those people. But you know what? Like, he can talk shit all he wants. He's going to learn very fast. When you talk shit in boxing, MMA, it's betting against the house. The house always wins. Because just like Conor McGregor, great men like Muhammad Ali, which he'll never be in the same fucking league as Muhammad Ali. You can talk all the shit you want. You can trash talk, sell those tickets. You're going to lose. One of the days, your up and comes is going to come. Whether you're great like Muhammad Ali or whether you're shit like Jake Paul.
The problem with Jake Paul, though, is Jake Paul is monetarily better off than 98% of the fighters out there, which is
horrible.
But that's just, again, we allow stupid people to become famous.
Yeah.
Well, exactly, though. Do you think Jake Paul really cares about how he's remembered in fighting? I mean, the dude is banking right now with these fights.
He is loaded. I've had a student that went over to his house in Calabasas, which is a very affluent neighborhood here in Southern California, and he said his house is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I guess that I should have put more time and effort into being a douchebag and being a loudmouth. But I don't know. I thought fighting was more important, but what do I know?
Exactly. So, final words. We got to wrap this up like a Christmas present. Wrap up the show for all my bros and hoes in different area codes. Gabe, final thoughts, final words, Mr. Gabe.
Yeah. First and foremost, Matt is a baby. A wuss pie baby. No, he's been giving me grief this whole time, so I had to give a little back. I hope everything is well with Matt. He had a family emergency. I hope all things go well with him and his family. Juan, thank you for coming in and listening to the ranting. Thanks to Sean Kanan for spending the time with us. Good talk as always, gentlemen, and that's all I've got to say.
Yep, and prayers to Matt's son. I hope he's listening, that we're all praying for him. You know, little guy's so tough, so strong. He's been through so much at such a young age. He's a tough kid, and we're all praying for him, and we all love him. So, on that note, Juan, thank you very much for filling in as a producer.
Absolutely.
And as always, you know, your knowledge is so appreciated, and bring on Sean Kanan, who is absolutely a great actor, and hopefully we can see him on Cobra Kai Season 4. Thank you so much, Gabe. And from all of us at Fight Mixer, tune in on Wednesday for another great show with the ladies show. And tune in next Thursday. We're going to have another great guest. So from all of us at Fight Mixer TV show, signing off, David Potter, Mr. Gabe, Juan, signing off. Ladies and gentlemen, peace.
Yo.
Peace. Cheers.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.